Okay, we're on page 834 on top. We're learning the middle of after the Korach story and after everything quieted down from the Korach story. Hashem is giving the Kohanim and the Levim the various gifts. We started learning the gift, the 24 gifts that were given to the Kohanim and Levim. And it started off by saying, you know, I'm giving you the Karbonis to eat. And in the second line from the top, this is another gift which I'm giving them. All the wavings of the children of Israel, meaning certain korbanos were waved. The Kohen held his hand under the owner's hand and they would wave it. He said that was also given. Nisatim was given to you, to you and your daughters with you. L'chok Olam, for an everlasting statute. Kol tohar bebeischa yechol oisei, as long as the person is pure, they can eat it. But you see a very big difference between Pasuk Yud and Pasuk Yud Aleph. In Pasuk Yud, the Torah says all male can eat it. In other words, there are certain gifts, like the korbanis, which is called kedesh ha-kadoshim, certain sacrifices, only male kohanim were allowed to eat it. These things the Torah says, you, your sons, and your daughters, meaning the women could also eat it. And then he says like this, Kol chelev yitzar v'chol chelev tirish v'dagon, all the best of your oil, the best of your wine, v'dagon and the grain, reishisam, the first ones, ashi yitnu l'Hashem, which were given to Hashem, l'chol nesatim were given to you. Okay? Now, what does this mean? That's the concept of truma, Rashi explains. The Torah here is saying that when you had a person had a farm, so they had to give truma. This truma really belonged to Hashem. Like the pasuk says, truma la Hashem. You have to give it to Hashem. Hashem says, listen, I'm not going to eat it. So I'm giving it to the Kohanim as payment for the reward of them working in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? Now, how much truma had to be given? So the Gemara says like this, biblically, one kernel. Because the Torah doesn't say how much truma to give. But Ma'aser, the Torah says 10%. Here the Torah says, by truma, the Torah doesn't say any measurements, any amounts. So the Gemara says, one kernel, chita achas, poteres sakri, which means, one kernel is good for the whole barn. You have 100 tons of grain. Biblically, one tiny kernel you give to the Kohen Truma, good enough. Then the Gemara says, the rabbis, though, gave an amount. They gave a shear. Yes. How much? If you're a nice guy, 1 out of 40. Average guy, 1 out of 50. You're cheap, 1 out of 60. And that's if you want to do the mitzvah right, but if you're cheap, you give 1/60th. If you're average guy, 1/50th. If you're a nice guy, 1/40. But again, the Torah is saying over here like this, the truth is, you're giving it to Hashem. Hashem says to the Kohanim, I'm giving this to you as payment for your work. But, if you notice, the Pasuk says again the expression, Chelev Yitzar. Chelev literally means the fattiest, the juiciest. Meaning, Hashem says, don't give, like we discussed last week, don't give me everything, but don't give me junk. Whatever you do, give me the best. Don't give me the junk. Bikuri, kol hasheh ba'artam, and then the Torah continues, these are all the gifts that the Kohanim are getting. The first fruits, asheh yaviu l'Hashem, which again, bikurim, you bring to the Beis HaMikdash, you're bringing them to Hashem. Hashem says, l'cho yihiyeh. Again, Hashem says, I'm giving it to the Kohanim. Kol tor beveischa yechlenu, all the pure people in your house eat it, meaning bikurim could be eaten by everybody, men, women, and children, but they have to be pure. Kol cherem b'Yisrael, everything which was segregated property, meaning sometimes a person said, I'm, what's the expression, segregating my property to Hashem. Basically a form of making something hegdish, but he says, I'm making this field cherem l'Hashem. Segregated to Hashem. So again, who gets it? The Torah says the Kohanim get it.
Why they say Tahor? Tahor means not good. Tahor means
Tahor means you cannot be Tomei.
Tomei. tame. So why the fruit be gay tame?
No, the person. The person is not allowed to be tame when he eats fruits of the base or karbonis or all these things. Like we said last week, when a person was tame, everybody had to know they were tame. They couldn't shake their hand, they couldn't, you know, because then it would make them tame. Kopeter Rechem, the firstborn of the womb, the chol basar for all flesh, asher yakrivu laHashem, that they would bring closer to Hashem, ba'adum of abehema yielach, are yours. Like we know, if a person had a b'chor, firstborn animal, that to bring it as a carbon. Who eats it? We say every morning in davening before Haidu. Ha-b'chor ne'echal la-kohanim. The kohanim eat it. Okay, not the owners. You had a firstborn animal, you had to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. It was brought as a carbon. Hashem said, but this is a gift going to the kohanim. But, ach-padei sifte eis b'chor ha-adam. But, you redeem the firstborn person. And the impure animals also have to be redeemed. Which means, only as we'll soon in Petach Hamor, only a firstborn donkey has to be redeemed. The concept is like this of a Bukhar. According to what the Torah is saying over here, when you give birth to a firstborn son, as the Torah says, but the Torah says, Peterechem. It's very interesting. The Torah says, it has to be the firstborn born from the womb. Which means, if a kid is born cesarean, as the Torah calls it, the Halacha calls it, Yaitze Deifen, comes out of the wall, meaning it doesn't come out naturally. That's what the Hebrew, the Yaitze Deifen is cesarean. You know why it's called cesarean, by the way? You know why such a... Because Caesar was born that way. So it's called cesarean, because Caesar was born like that. Huh?
I didn't know it.
Yeah, that's why you come to Chumash class, to learn about Caesar. Oh, 1 second. So now... So I was going to say that. So what happens... Halacha says if somebody gives birth cesarean first, and the second child is born natural... So the din is, he does also not need a pinyan a ben. Why? Because he's not a b'chor. The Torah says it has to be two criterias to redeem a firstborn. Number one, it has to be rechem, it has to be natural. And second thing, it has to be a b'chor. So if you can have a firstborn, that means technically in the times when the guys were allowed to have many wives, a guy can have three wives and three b'chors. You know what I mean? For Pinyan HaBen. As far as firstborn for inheritance, was only the firstborn son. But if a guy has three wives, as far as Pinyan HaBen goes, he would need a Pinyan HaBen for all the firstborns.
So that's why firstborn animals
too? No, firstborn cesarean is not redeemed.
So what does that mean?
You don't do a Pinyan HaBen.
You just don't do a
Pinyan HaBen? That's it.
Not required.
First,
no redemption.
Firstborn
animal has to be male
too?
I'm trying to understand the concept
of
redemption.
What price they put it to? Buy it from the corner. How was the range of
prices? Oh, so we're going to learn soon. Chamesh Shkalim. The Torah is going to say clearly. 1 second. What's your problem? Hello. Tell me your problem.
If you can't redeem your firstborn... What does that mean? You just don't redeem them? Wasn't the purpose of redeeming the firstborn? Because
what happens if... What happens... The firstborn belongs to the Kohen, technically. Right. You're redeeming it from the Kohen. What happens is the father says to the Kohen, you know what, keep my kid.
Really?
He's not allowed to do that. He has a mitzvah to redeem him.
So, but the child born by cesarean, you can't redeem
He
that.
Doesn't have to be redeemed. Okay. If somebody has a girl first, what happens sometimes.
In other words, it's not dedicated to Hashem, even though it's
correct. Okay. If somebody has a girl first, which the Gemara said, by the way, says, Bas tchila simen yofa labanim. If you have a daughter first, it's a good sign for the kids. But if a person has his firstborn daughter, and then 18 boys, there's still no firstborn. Right? Has to be a male firstborn, born naturally. By the way, cesarean is also, you don't, if it's kids born cesarean on Shabbos, you don't do a bris on Shabbos either for cesarean. It has to be, for Shabbos, has to be naturally born on this, you know, regular birth and then the eighth day and so on. But the Torah is saying like this. Again, b'duyev mi ben chedesh tifta. Now, what's the purpose? Why does it, what's the cheshbon of a month? Why a month? Why does he have to be redeemed at a month? Why can't we redeem him 3 days after he's born? At the bris, do the redemption. Why not? So it's said, by the way, that's why opinion of Ben has to be done on the 31st day. Not on the 30th day, because it has to live 30 days. Because up to 30 days, halachically, a person does not have an established life yet.
Neshama.
No, he has a neshama. The neshama of a person, even the neshama, the godly soul of a person, comes in stages.
Right.
At conception, birth, mm-hmm. bris,
40 days.
Bar mitzvah.
Not the 40 days.
No. By a girl, naming, not bris.
Right.
That's why our custom is you name a girl right away. You don't wait for Shabbat. If Monday and Thursday come, you name the kid right away. Because that's when the bris, because the Gemara says a girl is born circumcised. Which means the uniqueness, the greatness, the advantage of circumcision a girl has. So therefore, right away, when you name the baby, that's when the neshama is coming into the body. Now, so coming back to Pinyin Aben, it has to be on the 31st day because a child needs to be established life for 30 days. Before 30 days, God forbid, we know if a child passes away before 30 days old,
there's no
avelut, there's no shiva, there's no, there's nothing. Because they don't have an established life yet until they're 30 days old. After they're 30 days old, then they have a chazak of being alive, so then you have the mitzvah pinyin aben. Now, the mitzvah pinyin aben, until the kid is bar mitzvah, is on the father. Which means that once a kid reaches 31 days, unless it's Shabbos, obviously when you can't do it, you have a mitzvah of doing a pinyin aben. Every day that you don't, you are transgressing a positive mitzvah. Every day that you don't do it, you're transgressing a positive mitzvah. So let's say, for argument's sake, a kid needs a pinyin aben on Wednesday. Let's say, Wednesday would be the 31st day. And the family says, let's wait for Sunday. Throw a big party, you know, Persian style, big party for 8 hours. I don't know what they're doing there. But 8 hours...
Do you have to say Persian?
Yeah, I had to. Okay. What's that, a French party?
Everybody make a party.
Okay, but the party for 8 hours is Persian. You know that.
What about you could come party?
What about the French?
They don't party. They drink wine. They don't party. Everybody has their own. The Americans eat chocolate. Everybody has their things. Anyway... Okay, I'm sorry. I'll ask you for forgiveness, Erev Yom Kippur. And if I forget, remind me. So.
No, I'm sorry.
One second. So every day, let me finish. So every day that you don't do a pinyin aben, the father transgresses a positive mitzvah every day. Until the kid's bar mitzvah. Once the kid's bar mitzvah, it's his obligation to do it. If the kid is aware of it, and he knows he had never had a pinyin aben, he has to do it as soon as possible. Because every day he's transgressing a positive mitzvah. What's the positive mitzvah? The Torah says you have to redeem him when he's a month old. So you're not transgressing a negative commandment, but the Torah is saying every day after the 30 days, you're transgressing what the Torah says, do it on the 30th day. Now, if a father or a mother is a Kohen or a Levi, you do not need to do pinyin aben. That means... Huh?
Mother also?
Yeah. If a mother is a Bas Kohen or a Bas Levi, their kids don't need a pinyin aben. They don't need it. In other words, there's no obligation. And if you would do one with a bracha, you'd be saying a bracha in vain. Because there is no concept of pinyin aben. That's the so this is what the Torah says. A month old, you have to redeem it.
What about if it happens to be a Friday night? You still do it? No.
No, if you can't do Pinyan of Ben Shvi, so then you do it Saturday night or Sunday.
This is business.
That's what I said. If the 31st day falls on the Shabbos, so then you do it Saturday night or Sunday.
Why if the letters of Bas come? I'm just curious.
Because there's still a certain zchus as Levim that they have.
Correct.
That means even though the kid's not a Levi or a Kohen, because the father isn't, nevertheless they don't do opinion of it. But that's it. In other words, that kid, when they got married, unless it was to a Kohen or a Levi, they would need opinion of it. Yeah.
So the coin that you pick it up, should we show a Shabbat, or what kind of coin you can buy it? What kind of coin you can buy it?
What type of a coin?
One
that you like. People like to use a religious kohen that's acting like a kohen properly and all that. Technically, if he's not, as long as he's a kohen, you did the mitzvah.
Now, what if the father doesn't redeem the child and the child knows that the child's not yet bar mitzvah? Can he redeem himself?
No, he has to. He has to do it after bar mitzvah. It's not his obligation yet.
So he can't, like,
correct.
Father out.
No, he can't. He can't buy his father out.
They don't do it. How long you can do it? 90 years old can.
A 90-year-old man that didn't have opinion of Ben needs to do opinion of Ben.
It's okay. There's no restriction age anymore.
No, until he dies, he has an obligation to do opinion of Ben. Okay. If toyev mi ben chaydish tivda, a month old, ba'erkocha how much in its value? Okay, according to the value. Kesef chamesh shkolim b'shekel hakodesh, 5 silver shekels in the holy shekel, and like we learned in Parshas Kisisa, esrim gedo, each shekel is 20 gedo, which is just the measurement of and the weight of the shekel. Now, just in practical terms, today 5 shkolim that you need to do pinyan aben is the weight of 102 grams of silver. 102 grams of silver.
And that is,
you can give either that much weight of silver, 5 coins, or you can give the value of it. So let's say 101 grams of silver, whatever the price of silver fluctuates. But let's say, for argument's sake, it's $100.
$34.
No, for half a shekel. What are you talking about? What country do you live in? Silver, what you're talking about, this is half a shekel, what you're talking about. We're talking about 5 shekels, not a half a shekel. It's 10 times that much.
But you give it for real? Because I know that a lot of people make it like a big party and after they take back to the...
Halachically, it needs to be given to the kohen. It's the kohen's. Okay? If the kohen wants to give it back, I can give it back. Usually, practically speaking, what happens is the kohen usually has the coins. The kohen has the coins. So he sells it to the person. He could give it to him for free. Right? I have 5 shekels, right? If I want, I can give it to you a present. I can do whatever I want with it, right? And then, if I'm the kohen, you give it back to me.
Bye-bye.
Or I could sell it to you. Sometimes I could sell it to you for $1, even though it's worth $200. I could tell you whatever I want. So that's usually what it works,
It's not based on the value, it's based on the weight.
The weight. The weight of the silver is 102-103 grams of silver.
Or the
value of the weight, right? The value of 101 grams. So if silver is $5 an ounce, it's going to be much cheaper than if it's $20 an ounce, obviously. So it depends on the price of silver at that time.
But the initial concept is
the weight.
I have a question. Why?
What do you think they do when they sell chametz? Getting into the season, you sell chametz.
Yeah.
I don't know. You sell chametz to the guy, right? The guy needs to give you money for a down payment, for the rent and down payment. Yeah.
Right.
Where does the guy get the money from?
The dollar.
You don't give him no dollars. Where are you coming from? The rabbi gives the guy a present. It's $100 or whatever it is, depending how much chametz he's selling. Right? He gives the guy a present. This is your money. I'm giving you a present. Then the guy gives it back to the rabbi. It's a down payment. But it's the guy's money. It's literally the guy's money. What do they do by kedushin? A man has to give the woman a ring that belongs to him. Yeah? A lot of times you have the grandmother has a ring. She wants to marry off the daughter with it, the granddaughter with it. Right? So what do? It has to belong to the chassan. So the chassan has to buy the ring. For a dollar even, he has to buy the ring from the grandmother, the mother, whatever. And then it becomes legally his. And then he gives it to the girl to be to kedushin. The same to the opinion of Ben. What?
Is shekalim is different with shekalim that using for prim? They told me you know, it's silver. Now he's saying silver.
What's the difference? Max is a shekel. In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, they gave silver half shekels. Okay? This is only a zeched, a remembrance of giving half a shekel. Therefore, we give a half a dollar. We don't give half a... You have to give the currency of the country. In Mexico, they give a half a peso for maxis a shekel. It's not... The Torah is not saying a half a shekel. Maxis a shekel, halacha says, you give half of the currency of that particular country. So in America, it's a dollar. In France, it's the euro, or whatever it is today, or the franc, or the pound, or the shekel in Israel. But it doesn't have to be silver. There are people that do it with silver, but halachically, it doesn't have to be with silver. Okay, so he says, so therefore you have to, again, this also belongs to the Kayin. Ach b'chor sherd, but a firstborn ox. Or b'chorg eiz, or a firstborn goat. Loi sivda, you cannot redeem it. And here the Torah says like this. If it's a kosher animal, you cannot redeem it. You have to bring it as a carbon. Hey, as domam tizrek al mizbeach, the blood you need to squirt on the mizbeach. As chelbam takter, you have to burn the fats. Ishe reach nichoyach l'Hashem. You have to burn it as a carbon. In other words, somebody has a firstborn ox, they can't redeem it. And they have to, the Torah says, you have to shech that animal, you have to bring it. Ubesarim yiyaloch, and the meat will be the kohens. Kechazi hatnufa, like the,
if you burn it, there's no leftover to give to kohen.
Huh?
There's no leftover to give to kohen.
Yeah.
So why they give to kohen? There's nothing there to give to kohen.
Oh yeah, they don't burn the whole animal. It's not a korban eila. The breast of the animal, the thighs of the animal, that's all you, the kohens. Like it says, k'chazi atunov, like the breast of the animal, ochsheka yomim, and the thigh of the animal, the right thigh, l'choyia, belongs to the kohen. Yeah? Kol trumas ha-kodoshim, all the uplifting of the kachim, ashi yarimu b'nei Yisrael Hashem, that the Jews are giving up to Hashem, I'm giving it to you and your children forever. It's an eternal salt-like covenant. What does it mean, salt-like covenant? Just like salt is eternal, these things are eternal. Okay? For you and your children. We're not going to learn and then discuss this. But they cannot inherit part of Eretz Yisrael. They cannot have a share of the spoils. I am your share, I am your heritage. That means the Torah is saying over here, very interesting din, the Gemara learns out, that a Levi is not allowed, Kohen and Levi, is not allowed to own land. What happens if a guy wants to give him land to own? It's forbidden to own land for a Levi or a Kohen. Okay, Hashem says, I'm giving you all these things, but you're not getting the land. Now, altogether, there's 24 gifts, which is, like we learned, the Gemara says, Chav Dalet Matnas Kohuna. And they all learn out from these psukim. So the Rebbe explains why. Well, what's this inyan of 24? Why does the Torah pick 24? Okay. And also, Rashi brings down over here an analogy from the Gemara, from the Medrash, that this comes in continuation to Korach's fight. That means after Korach fought against Moshe Rabbeinu, so because of that, Hashem says to the Kohanim, I'm giving you the reward. So the Ramban and other commentaries learn has nothing to do with Korach. Hashem says you have to watch the Beis HaMikdash, so I'm giving pay you for that. But most Mefarshim Rashi learns that this is really connected to Korach. What happened with Korach? Two things happened with Korach. Number one, Korach actually stole, what he wanted to steal was from Moshe and Aaron. He didn't come outright and say, hey, you guys are no good. First he went quietly to all the tribes, and he started telling them, you think I'm fighting for myself, I'm fighting for you, you know, you guys have to be part of this. Korach went like a ganef. There's a din like this. There's a ganef, and there's a gazlan. A gazlan is a guy that steals in broad daylight. He's not afraid of anybody. In the middle of the day, he steals. A ganef, a thief, is one who does it quietly. He goes in the middle of the night, when everybody's sleeping, and, you know, he does it quietly. So the Torah says, when a ganef is caught, he pays double. When a gazlan is caught, he doesn't pay double. That means you steal in the middle of the day, you only pay back what you stole. You do it quietly in the middle of the night, the Torah says in Parshas Mishpatim, he has to pay double. So the Gemara says, why? She says like this, a ganef is worse than a gazlan. Why is he worse? A gazlan is a certain personality. He does it in the middle of the day. He's not afraid of anybody. He's not afraid of God, and he's not afraid of people. That's his personality. He has chutzpah. You know? He's not afraid of God, not afraid of people. He does it broad daylight. A ganef is worse. Why does he steal at night? Because he's afraid of people. But he's not afraid of God, because he's stealing. So the Gemara says, a ganef, the Torah says, pays double. Because you're worse. You're afraid of people, but you're not afraid of God. That's worse than not being afraid of anybody. Korach was stealing from the 12 tribes. Did this fight against Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Torah says, if that's the case, Kohanim and Levim get 24, double. There's 12 tribes, so you get double, that's the 24 gifts that a Kohen gets. Okay? Then there's another thing that Rebbe explains over here. What's the connection between the 24 gifts of Kohanim and Levim to the story of Korach? What did Korach say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Korach said to Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, everybody's holy, what makes you holier? Right? Why are you holier than thou? So the question is, all the commentaries ask a question, and we discussed this when we were learning earlier. Moshe Rabbeinu said to Korach, you also want to be a Kohen. Right? Korach comes to Moshe Rabbeinu and says, if everybody's holy, why do you need to be holier? Remember, he came with a talis full of tchelis or a house full of sfarim. He said, if everybody's holy, why are you holier than thou? But the question is, Korach himself wanted to be a Kohen. So he also wanted to be holier. So he screamed at Moshe, why do you want to be holy? And he himself wants to be holier. So it says in Kabbalah, what's the difference between Korach and Moshe? Korach wanted a kahuna that is completely aloof, completely separated, has nothing to do with the people. Moshe Rabbeinu's kahuna was a kahuna like Aaron and Moshe, that would be connected to the people. So therefore, the Rebbe explains like this. After Korach was killed, okay, Hashem said, I don't want a Kohen like Korach wanted, to completely aloof, nothing to do with the people. I want a Kohen that the people give him things. That means there's a connection between the people and the Kohanim. Not that Kerech wanted the Kohanim should have no such connection to the people. Hashem said no, and that's why the Rebbe says that's the connection between the gifts to the Kohen, to show that the Kohanim and the people are connected. They have a connection from the fact that the Jews give the Kohanim their shares. But, to tell you the thing, an interesting thing. What you're giving the Kohanim is not yours. It's really Hashem's. Hashem gave it to you. You have to give it to Hashem. And therefore it's really Hashem's. And then Hashem says, I'm giving it to the Kohanim. It's a very interesting halacha. All these gifts, like Truma, Mice, and all these things, right? I have to give it to the Kohen. But I can pick the Kohen of my choice. Right? If I like you as a Kohen, I could pick you. I like you, I could pick you. Right? I can give it to... So the Gemara says, what happens? I wanted to give it to you. But you're a Kohen. And you come to my house and take it. You say, listen, it's not yours anyway. You have to give it to the Kohen. I'm taking it. And he took it. The question, what's the din? So the din is the Kohen keeps it. Because not merely mine. He didn't steal from me. Because it's the Kohen's. The only thing is, I have the option to give it to the Kohen of my choice. So there's an argument in the Gemara if that has a money value to it. Does that have a monetary value? So in other words, the question is, let's say it's worth $5 for me to give it to the Kohen of my choice, and the Kohen takes $100 of stuff, does he have to give me $5 or not? That's an argument in the Gemara. If it's money, if it's not money. But technically, it doesn't belong to me, it belongs to the Kohen. And if the Kohen takes it from me, he's not stealing. Because I have an obligation to give it to the Kohen.
Any Kohen?
I could give it to any Kohen of my choice, but it's not really mine. It's the Kohen's because it's God's, and Hashem said, give it to the Kohen. But I can give it to the Kohen. That right I do have. Hashem says, you have enough ownership to give it to the guy you want. What? A popular Kohen got more stuff than an unpopular Kohen. It's like that in everything. So Kohen who tried to be good with people.
Or they just come up your house and
steal. Well, it's not the right thing to do, but if they did it, they did it. In other words, they're not called stealing.
They're taking
something that really belongs to them.
Not long general. It's general. There's no special people.
As it belongs general. To Kohenim.
You cannot take it from this Kohen to the other Kohen. That's it. No.
No, Kohen gets it. Then it becomes his personal property.
The rules that the Kohen cannot own any land doesn't apply today.
No.
Well, today nobody... Correct. It doesn't apply today, but when Mashiach comes and all the land will be redivided the way it was, they're not going to have any land.
You're saying land as in...
Land.
Well, no, because I thought we had a discussion...
Excuse me, it's only in Israel. In America, it could be the biggest real estate owner in Israel.
Wait a minute. I thought there was a discussion some time ago about if somebody gave their house or whatever to a Kohen. Long time ago, we discussed other laws that dealt with giving to the Kohanim, and it involved also property.
No, the Torah gave the Levium 42 cities to live in, and the 6 cities of refuge, but they didn't own the land. In fact, the Torah says clearly, "V'chelek liyela b'secha" means when they went to war and they came back with the booty, the spoils of war. The Kohanim also didn't divide it. They are designated for the sole purpose of Hashem.
They pay the rent?
Cities of Levium, no.
What they do? Are they free? What they do? If not own, they have free land.
They have free land. free to live.
To live, they own it.
To the temple, not to the kohen, but they could give, you can give land to the temple.
Yeah, but then the question is, go back in Yovel or not?
Right.
But the Rambam says a very interesting thing. At the end of the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, and this the Rambam, the Rebbe quoted many, many times, the Rambam writes, Lei Shevet Levi Bilvad, not really the tribe of Levi, especially today, was designated. Any Jew who designates his life for the sake of God is called a Levi. It's called the concept of a Levi. Not halachically a Levi, but he's considered, like Hashem says here, Ani chalkecha v'nachloscha, I am your share, I am your heritage among the Jewish people. That's what it is. Because any Jew who designates his life for serving of Hashem is called Shevet Levi. Conceptually. Not actually, because he's not, but conceptually.
So what's the difference when he's not?
Today?
Yes.
The only difference today is who gets which aliyah. And a Levi doesn't have to do a pinyan aben, and a kohen could do a pinyan aben, and that's it. That's the only difference.
How come Pidya Ben is not when Bet HaMikdash is, should be Bet HaMikdash time? Not now.
Because the Torah says certain, it's interesting, certain gifts of the Kohen applies only at the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Certain gifts, like Pidya Ben, applies, or even B'chor today.
Yeah.
If a guy in Israel has a firstborn animal, they have to let it graze until it gets a blemish. Until then it's holy. Certain things apply even when there's no Bet HaMikdash. Certain things apply. And that the Torah decides which ones apply always, which one. The Pinyan HaBen applies, because the Psukim say for all generations, whatever the expression is, Pinyan HaBen applies today. You can't give a Kohen Truma today. Right? Or, you know, the Mitzvah of Challah. When you separate Challah, when you bake bread or Challah, right? You separate Challah. So what do we do with it today? We burn it. Why do you burn it? Really, you're supposed to give it to our Kohen. But we don't know today who's a Kohen. So therefore, we burn it. And if a Kohen's tummy, he's not allowed to eat it. I mean, there's a lot of dinim. So because of that, we wrap it up and we burn it. Because there's two things. For instance, separating challah, there's two things. Number one, in the biblical times, it's a gift for the Kohen. You have to give it to the Kohen to eat. But also, that allows you to eat the rest of the food.
Kosher.
Let's see, Truma Meiser. Even in Israel today, right? They don't give it to Kohenim. Today they destroy it. Right? Because Truma and Meiser, the laws of Truma and Meiseris, and all the other dinim, it does two things. Without tithing, you can't eat the food. Giving 10% allows you, and truma allows you to eat the food. That's issue number one. Until you separate truma and meiser, you cannot eat your grain. Okay? That's number one. Then there's number two. That gift belongs to the kohen. So you have to give it to the kohen as a present, but it's two different things over here. One is to permit the food to be eaten, the grain. And secondly, you have to give it to the kohen. So today, because kohenim are tamei, and if you're tamei, you can't eat truma and all that stuff. So what do we do today? We burn it. But you need to separate it anyway, because otherwise you can't eat your food. If you don't separate challah, if you have, let's say, enough dough, and you're not separating challah, you can't eat the bread. So you need to separate it to allow you to eat it. Now the question is like this. Technically, you're supposed to give this to a kohen. You can't give it to a kohen, so you burn it. Pinyan HaBen, the Torah says we still do.
Where do they get the idea that you have to burn it as opposed to do something else with it?
Because you're not allowed to do anything else with it. You have to burn it in a way that you don't benefit from it either.
Nobody can eat it.
Does it make how much flour you have and how much you have to take out?
No, yeah, if you have to have, let's see, for argument's sake, over 3 pounds of flour, then you have an obligation to separate challah.
How much? I mean, does it make any difference? Or just take out little bit.
No, the minig is take out a kesayis. So they usually take out a handful. Yeah. But again, the purpose of that is to allow the food to be eaten. Then, the second aspect of it you can't do, so we burn it.
So a 5-pound challah and a 60-pound batch of challah, same thing, one kazay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you're making it all together.
Yeah.
If you're making it separate doughs and separate times, then you have to separate each time separately.
Do you have to burn them separately?
Or no. You can make one big happy bonfire. But you can't roast marshmallows on it. You can't, yeah. Okay, so Hashem said, I am your chelek, I am your nachala. In a deeper sense, nachala is inheritance. Okay, I'm your part, I'm your nachala. There's an interesting thing, a chelek, there's Reb Sadia Goin writes, ha'etzem k'shatotefes b'miksosi, atotefes b'kuli. No, you didn't get it. That was Hebrew. I know. Etzem, the essence, when you have part of it, you have it all. For instance, the Moshul Chassid is a very simple example. You take an apple, okay? Cut a piece of the apple. In that piece of the apple that you cut, you have the entire apple. You have the whole taste of the apple. You don't have half the taste of the apple. You cut an apple in half, or a quarter. You don't have a quarter of the taste of the apple. In the essence, any part of the essence you have the entire essence.
DNA.
That's chelik, part. Nachlo, inheritance, is another interesting concept. Inheritance is not dependent on anything but being connected. We learned this then many times. The Gemara says an expression, "Hatinuk miyad sheyotze dat laver ha'olam yoyrish." A kid, as soon as he comes out of the mother, as soon as he comes into the world, he inherits. You can have a father who is worth $86 billion, okay, and if he's an only child, and he comes out, he's 3 minutes old, yeah, and the father dies, he gets $86 billion. Okay, I'm not talking about the taxes. Okay, you get the $86 billion, which is interesting. The kid is completely, basically, all practical purpose, nothing personal, brainless. He doesn't even know it's his father. He doesn't know what a father means. He doesn't know anything, but he inherits the entire father. David HaMelech says in Tillim, even takes it a step further. In Tillim, David HaMelech says, Tachas avisecha yil banecha. Your children are instead of the parents. Okay? The child is instead of the parent. Not only that, we learned the halacha, the interesting halacha, in inheritance. If five kids, let's say a guy has five kids, right? And all five inherit. It doesn't mean that they inherit a fifth. Doesn't mean that. Halachically, each child inherits everything. Practically speaking, five kids cannot get it all. So practically speaking, you divide it into five. But halachically, each one inherits everything. Okay? Hashem is saying, and therefore, it says by Eretz Yisrael, "V'nasati lachem merosha," every Jew inherits Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't matter if they know they're Jewish, not know they're Jewish, they know their son, they don't know anything. They're a Jew, they inherit. Okay, it's automatic, and you inherit everything. Then you have Hashem says, "I am the chelek of the Jewish people," meaning, when you have a part of me, Hashem says, you have all of me. I am your part, I am your inheritance. It shows a very powerful connection between Hashem and the Jew, that a Jew and Hashem are so interconnected that no matter what it is, they're one.
Most of them, they have Kohen and Levi. They get most of them.
They get the most of the money.
No,
because they're representing us. I'm a Levi, I shouldn't talk. We're representing you. The Arizal writes that the Levim today are going to be Kohenim when Mashiach comes. The Pasuk says, Kohenim al-Levim. He says, the Levim, Dr. brings it down in Tanya. The Levim Sha'achshav, you Kohenim la'asad. The present day Levim are going to become Kohenim. What?
They're born.
Huh? The level of Kohenim Gedolim. Everything moves up a level.
Yisrael be
Levi? No, Yisrael, I'm going to stay Yisrael. Can't join the exclusive club.
Different question, but why so many Levi if their name is not Levi? Like you, for example.
Why should their name be Levi?
Cohen is Cohen.
No. You're going to have Cohen...
My father's last name is Katz. That's a Kohen name.
You know why Katz stands for Kohen Tzedek?
But I'm just saying there are different.
That's what
Kaplan.
Kaplan, not all Kaplan. I know a lot of Kaplans that are not Kohenim.
A lot of Kohenim
that are not Kohenim. Yeah, I know a lot of Kohenim that are not Kohenim. First of all, the whole last name, you know, change. People change. They have to cross the borders. They have to switch names and change names. But you should know that a guy technically, you know, they have this DNA for Kohenim. You see. At the Baba Meisa. Because a guy can have a Kohen DNA and be a non-Jew.
How come?
If a Kohen marries a non-Jewish woman.
Right, but it just proves okay? Somewhere.
And has a kid. The kid's Jewish?
No.
Does he have his father's DNA?
Yeah.
So he can have a DNA of being a Kohen, but he's a guy. I mean, like...
It just proves that there's a Kohen somewhere in your lineage.
Yeah, but what does it mean? So what?
It
could mean your mother's 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 mother was a Kohen. So what? I mean, it doesn't...
It'd be okay.
You can't prove a guy being a Kohen today from DNA. I mean, it's...
You can convert... I mean, if it says, I'm converted, are you really converted or not?
To whom? Yeah. From Jew to Goy or Goy to Jew?
Yeah, Goy to Jew. Jew to Goy.
Never. It doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
A Jew can't convert...
A Jew cannot convert, but... But if a Jew did accept officially other religions and practice other religions, when they do tshuva, Shulchan Aruch says they need to do what's called rabbinic conversion. Rabbinic conversion means they need to go to the mikveh in front of a bet din and re-accept mitzvahs. But that's only, it's very complicated. It's only if they actually went into other religions and like were baptized and went to church and believed in it and all that. Then when they come back, they need to do a proper rabbinic conversion. Obviously, a bris they don't need again, but they have to go to the mikveh in front of a beis din or a woman in front of a beis din and go to the mikveh and re-accept mitzvahs. But that's only rabbinically because they, you know, but the Jew is a Jew. You can never get rid of it. Even if a person converts properly, according to Halacha, yeah? And they did it, and then a week later they decide to be, forget it, them giving it up, doesn't help, they're still Jewish.
I've heard that if you could prove that the person was not in their right mind at the time that they did the conversion...
Yeah, okay, but that's exceptional cases. But I'm saying, if a person did become a Jew, that's it, they can never go back again.
How come Chabad looking for a Jew if you don't trust the Jews anymore?
Huh?
Chabad looking for a Jew.
What do you mean you don't trust the Jew? Never trust a Jew.
No.
The Jews are the last ones
because
to trust.
Because you don't accept that you are Jewish or not Jewish.
No, we find out if the person's Jewish or not.
We find out. Because DNA be changing.
Right. It's a very big problem today when somebody comes to you that you don't know and they're not religious. And they want to convert. And they want you to marry them. Yeah? It's very difficult today. Number one, you have to find out maybe somebody was adopted along the way. Maybe there were conversions along the way, which were not halachically correct. There's a lot of issues that you need to know. So there's a big problem today that people do research. to find out, to the best of their knowledge, that the person's Jewish.
That's why we have Google. Google it.
Google, how can I find Google?
Not Google. Google ain't getting you nowhere. No, it's a very big problem today.
You have to have a ketubah of a parent.
And if they don't have, they weren't married according to Orthodox, let's say, or they lost it, or they never had a religious marriage. It's very difficult. You have to go and look and, you know. Okay.